You know, I almost gave up making this particular episode because I already recorded this thing. I recorded it fully. I recorded it well and perfectly, right? And then I went ahead and deleted it by mistake, not intentional, by mistake. I didn't mean to. And you know, after I had poured out my heart, given all my thesis, like everything I did. But anyway, I decided, you know what, I'm not going to give in, especially since because this is Mental Health Awareness Month and I haven't put out any episode, even though I had plans to put out an episode each Saturday of the month of May. But academics, exam, all those kind of things, I kind of got derailed and I didn't have the time to do most of that. So this is me making up for that. So expect this episode and then expect another episode immediately after this one, which will be the next Saturday before we enter into the month of, one month comes after me, June. Yes, before we enter into the month of June. But all of that announcement aside, let me first give you the gist of what this episode is going to be about. So again, it's Mental Health Awareness Month. So this episode is definitely following in that theme. And I'm going to be answering a question that a friend asked me in the midst of a conversation. A question that I slightly dodged, right? Because my answer to the question at the moment shocked me. And I was like, nah, maybe I'm just reading too much into things. But then I thought of it and then kept on thinking. And I was like, you know what? I would like to share this with you and see what you think. I'd like to hear what you think after you listen to this. But dear friend, today, in this episode, I am going to be answering the question, why do you say you are fine when you are not? Why do you hide your pain? For what good reason, even though you clearly need to tell somebody, even though you clearly need help, why do we say we are fine even when we are not? So, hello once again, dear friend. Generic greetings, whatever time of the day you are, blah, 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 blah. I hope you've been well, essentially. I've been experiencing shaggy, like I've said in previous episodes. If you are just listening to this, if you are new to the Volatile Times with Daniel podcast, and you don't know what the meaning of shaggy is, shaggy is a Nigerian slang for suffering, basically. I'm suffering. Essentially, that's how I like to, you know, interpret it. We all know these things are quite subjective. But like I said, if this is your first time listening to an episode of Volatile Times with Daniel, hello, my name is Daniel Briggs Adesa. Briggs is a nickname and I like to go by Daniel Briggs. Or you can just call me Briggs. Don't call me Adesa. Only close friends get to do that. I've seen some of you do that and I'm like, nah, fam. I'm not tolerating it. But anyway, what is this podcast about? This podcast is simply just me talking to you about different issues. Most of the time is social issues, offering an analysis of society, helping people to understand things on a much more deeper level. You know, that's basically the point of this thing. Understanding, growing wiser, you know, understanding the world better, yada, yada, yada. It's been a time, you know, everybody's continually going crazy. So hopefully today's episode will either add to that craziness or give a sense of balance, because my answer to the question that I'm going to be answering today is most likely not one people are going to be expecting me to give. But for those who know me, it will probably be on brand. So let's get into it, shall we? So I was in the midst of a conversation with a friend, somebody who I hadn't seen in a while, somebody who was hiding himself from me because he had done something wrong. And then for some reason, he thought because I was angry at the fact that I did something wrong that hurt me, I wouldn't want to talk to him anymore. So there was a sense of shame there that he was definitely experiencing. And that would have most likely been cleared up if he just talked to me. Right. And somebody might say, why didn't you approach and talk to me? I couldn't. I tried, but I couldn't talk to him because the access to communication was one way at that point in time. But anyway, all of that is past. I gave that context to say this. In the midst of the conversation, he asked me the question, why do we say we are fine when we are not? And I, you know, gave some sort of a generic answer, because the major answer I wanted to give, I didn't feel comfortable giving it at that particular point in time, because I didn't think I had thought about it very, very well. But now I think I have, and I would like to present it. So, just a little bit of a caveat. Since going forward, some of the things I'm going to be talking about in some episodes will need me to mention some things that you might not be familiar with. I'm going to be defining some terms here, right? So just stay with me. I promise everything is going to make sense and everything is going to click. Are we ready? Okay. So this is why we say we are fine when we are clearly not. It's for two reasons. There's a main reason, and then there's a secondary reason. There's a primary reason, then there's a secondary reason. The primary reason why you hide your pain, why we act like we are fine, even though we are not, is because people are disgusted by your pain. And due to that disgust, this is not the secondary reason, due to that disgust, you are ashamed, right? You experience shame. And so those two things combine together to form why we hide. Now, before somebody raises or kicks up a fuss or anything like that, let me explain myself. This is where I'll be defining time. So let me define disgust, put it in context, right? So listen up close. You're going to like this. This is a definition of disgust that we're going to be working with. Disgust is a strong and aversive or negative emotion or reaction characterized by intense displeasure, revulsion, or repugnance towards certain objects, behaviors, or ideas. In other words, if you say you are disgusted by something, there's a very strong and probably negative reaction to that thing or that idea. It revulses you. It makes you think, ew, God, no. Right? And this isn't necessarily a bad thing. I'm not going to put it that way. I won't put it that way that it's necessarily a bad thing. But it usually leads to bad inferences. Now, let me define shame. You can define shame as an intensely negative emotion or state characterized by a painful sense of personal failure, inadequacy, or a violation of social norms. Note that down, resulting in a diminished self-worth and a desire to hide or escape scrutiny or criticism. So, let's simplify both definitions, right? Disgust is basically you having a strong and negative reaction towards something that inspires a form of displeasure within you. And shame. Now, I'm defining shame in the context of, you know, personal shame, and not shame that is thrown upon you. So personal shame, in a sense, is a negative emotion or state of mind that is due to some sort of perceived failure, right? Maybe you've perceived that you fail to meet up to a particular standard, or you fail to meet up to some particular expectations, you know, all those kind of things, right? And then it causes you to have a diminished self-worth, a desire to hide away, to wear a mask, sort of, right? So now, why am I saying that these two things are the reason why we usually hide our pain, hide our grief away from people? Why do I say people are disgusted by our pain? Well, Lord, how do I make this and not make it seem like as if I'm insulting or attacking people? See, the thing about being disgusted, first and foremost, is that there is no objective measure of disgust. There is no one thing that necessarily disgusts everybody at a time. Most of the time, our sense of disgust is motivated by cultural things, right? By the way we are socialized, the things that we see as taboo, the things that we see as not allowed, or the things that we deem in our society to not be normal, to not be the expected, to not be the desired things, right? So most of the time, our sense of disgust is motivated by things like that. And then the thing is, disgust at the same time can be a collective thing. Disgust, what I mean by that is this, disgust isn't just personal. Remember I said most of the time what disgusts us is designed, is motivated, not necessarily by biological things or a personal sense of belief, but most likely by what is already considered disgusting in our society, right? So which means the disgust you most likely experience, you experience it on a personal level. In other words, there are things that personally disgust you as a person, right? For me, it is porridge. If you're eating porridge in front of me, I might befriend you. You understand? I might break up our friendship at that point in time. If you are dating me, you cannot be eating porridge. I'm sorry. Porridge eaters, avoid me. Thank you very much. Right? That's an example of something that personally disgusts me. But then what about something that you are not the only one who is disgusted by it, and it is natural, it is seen as normal to be disgusted by that particular thing? One of those things is suffering. One of those things is shame. One of those things is pain. We live in a society where we emphasize a lot about individual wellness. We emphasize that people should be doing all right. You should be doing all right. You should be healthy. You should be fit. You should be making money. You should be this and that and that and that and that. There's all this individual responsibility without accountability of the system that you are expected to work within. So everybody tells you that, you know, you are a man. You are supposed to do this and this and that. Da, 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 da. But then let's say you are unemployed. Let's say you are fat. Let's say you've never been able to successfully get a date. Let's say you never been able to successfully get anybody to have sex with you, because one of the expectations of men and boys in our society is that we are not supposed to be able to control our sexual desires. We are supposed to be fucking everything and wanting to be fucked by everything. So, permit my French, but this is an explicit podcast. I specifically registered it for that so that I can use cuss words sometimes. So, anyway, yeah, going forward. So there are expectations, there are things, right? And one of the expectations that we have for people in our society is that people are supposed to be doing well. All this mental health nonsense that everybody's talking about, you are a weak person, you don't have resilience, right? If you are depressed. And now that might seem wicked to a lot of us right now, because a lot of us are keen into the narrative of mental health and then, you know, caring for our mental health. And here's the thing. Due to this societal expectation that you're supposed to be doing well, another thing that is now frowned upon is when you are not doing well. Because here's the funny thing. They say, biologically speaking, we are propensed, we are moved or motivated to desire things or like things that look or give us the image of health, right? Things that look healthy. Let me tell you the truth. Shege does not look healthy. Depression is not healthy. Suffering of any kind is not healthy. And so, because it is not healthy, because we do not like these things, and because we actively frown against any state of perceived failure in our society, we are disgusted by somebody who isn't showing us that image of personal wellness, who isn't showing us that image that they are doing all right, that they are a baller. You understand? Nobody wants to be a mechanic. Everybody wants to be a CEO, all right? And this is something that can be related to a philosophical argument called the argument from disgust. Yes, I'm going to define it. Don't worry. The argument from disgust is an argument that basically says that the feeling of disgust basically says that the feeling of disgust that you have towards a particular thing, a particular idea, a particular person is enough to deem that thing or deem that person as undesirable or wrong, whether morally speaking or whatever, right? It suggests that the intensity of one's disgust is a reliable indicator of the moral status or inherent wrongness of something. Now, I'm just going to tell you, the argument from disgust does not make sense on a logical point, you know, because it's basically saying, I don't like this thing because it makes me feel uncomfortable. And because I do not like this thing, due to the reason that it makes me feel uncomfortable, I'm disgusted. And so, which means something has to be inherently wrong with that thing. And there are a bunch of examples I can raise for this. Number one, homophobia. Rest in this place. homophobia kindly rests in this place. And I'm not talking about religious beliefs where it's that gay marriage is a sin or homosexuality is a sin. I'm talking about the cultural belief that homosexual people are disgusting and they are most likely deviants. They want to molest children. They want to do this and do that. They want to ruin society. All these conspiracy theories that spread around, you know, it falls under. Another big example that falls under something that is usually justified based on the argument of disgust is racism, right? How did it start? We are whites. We are blessed by God. You are dark. You are dark. The Mormons for some time believed that Black people were cursed by God because of sin or something along those lines. It honestly doesn't make sense. No argument from disgust, nothing that is justified based on the argument from disgust makes sense. Have I said that enough? Yes. Okay. Now let's move into the answering of the question actually. Whenever you are depressed, whenever you have feelings of intense anxiety, there is this inner desire to hide away from people, to hide how you're actually feeling from people. Because you hear most people say this thing, and we've made so many memes about it, that nobody wants to hear about your struggle, right? Nobody really cares to hear whether you're struggling or anything. Nobody really has time for that. And to a large extent, it is true. And the reason why it is true is not necessarily because we wouldn't like to hear that you're struggling and help you out, but more so because we have an internalized sense of disgust towards any expression of pain. That is why most of the time we see crying as somewhat irritating, as somewhat displeasing. Imagine you see a man start crying. Now, this is going to delve into something I'm going to address in the next episode that will come after this. I'm not going to give the title. But whenever we talk about men and vulnerability, we always talk about men need to be able to cry, right? That boys are raised telling them in one form or one way or the other that crying is bad for boys, that a boy is not supposed to cry, which is true. There's a lot of data to support it and a lot of personal experience to support it. But now here's the thing. Calm down. If you have been raised to believe that a particular, you know, group of people in the population, men, for example, now, are not supposed to show a particular emotion that solicits tears, except maybe on their marriage day, they are seeing their wife-to-be walk down the aisle towards them, or maybe when their wife just gives birth and they hold their child in their arm for the first time, like, or maybe when they are going through some ridiculously extreme, intense pain. Those are the times that we say men are supposed to be able to cry. And even then, there's a particular way as a guy you are supposed to cry. You can't be going, oh my God. Like, you can't be having snot and everything, you know, tears are running down. You have to be that silent, Peaky Blinders kind of cry, you understand? Where, you know, like, you close your eye, drawing a deep breath, you raise your head up, and, you know, tears just flow down, but you don't make any sound. That is the manly way to cry, right? And that is the only time we would like to see your tears. Thank you very much. Ladies understand this thing very, very much so. There's a reason why you see a lot of guys talk about, oh, you know, whenever she cries, she looks so cute. It's because ladies know that even if she really cries for real and shows you what real tears look like, you won't find it cute. If anything, you'll find it irritating and disgusting to look at. Because guess what? Suffering is not supposed to look good. Suffering is not supposed to be pleasurable. Except if you're a sadist or a masochist, then, you know, do your own, pull up some Machiavellian bullshit and do your thing, you know, more power onto you. But for the rest of us, we don't like suffering. Either suffering that we are personally experiencing or suffering that we are witnessing in somebody else's life. That is why most of the time, if you see places where they are comforting somebody, maybe the person lost a child, maybe the person lost a job, maybe the person just got broken up with, there's always this sense of rush for the person to stop crying. for the person to stop grieving. If you don't get what I'm saying, let me put it in context like this. Say, for instance, let's say you're a lady, right? And then your girlfriend just got broken up with. And she's crying, she's bawling her eyes out. Most of the time, most likely, while you're trying to comfort her, at some point you are going to say the words, "Come on now, stop crying now. You don't worry, you deserve better. He lost. You know, he's the one who has lost. Oh yeah, now, stop crying now. Come on, cheer up." Let me ask the question. Why are we saying those words exactly? Because those words communicate one particular thing. Can you please hurry up with the tears? Can you quickly go through this grieving process and finish, please? Whenever we are offering words of comfort to people, we don't realize it, but most of the time, our words of comfort to themselves usually do much more harm because we desire for them to speed through. What's that giving term? I was going to use the giving term, but anyway, let's go with speed through. We desire for them to speed through, to quickly go through their grieving process, to quickly grieve and get it over with. Is it because we think, oh, crying is bad for them? No, it's not. It's most likely due to two reasons. Number one, we really do feel bad for them and we hope they get better and we want them to get better fast. But why exactly are we in a rush for people to heal? It's because we are disgusted by that pain, ultimately. Regardless of your goodwill, seeing them cry, seeing them in pain, seeing them express any form of grief, whether or despair or whatever, irritates and displeases us on a deeper level than we'd like to admit. Now, this doesn't make you a bad person. This doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't make any one of us a bad person per se. It's just how we are. It's how our society is. It's how we think. It's how we act in our society, right? So people are disgusted by those expressions of grief, right? I can't count the amount of times I've expressed grief in somebody's DM and then kind of subtly being ghosted in between, those confessions. Most of the time when you ask somebody, "How are you doing? Are you sure you're fine?" "No, you can tell me if you're not doing okay." And the person is like, "Yeah, I'm not doing fine." And then we ask the person what's going on. We usually expect the person to summarize their pain, mostly because, number one, we do not want to be subjected to the emotions of pain and grief and despair that they are experiencing. Because again, it doesn't look cute, honey. It doesn't please us. It's not entertainment. It doesn't make us feel good, because another thing that it does, another reason why it causes such displeasure and disgust within us, is that it goes against our expectations of the world. We expect everything to work out well for us. We expect everything to go well for us. We expect everything to go well for the people around us. And we would never desire that people around us, the people we care about, are suffering. We would never desire that they are going through pain, right? But when we see them going through that pain, that very pain that we so much wish does not exist in our perception of reality, we are disgusted, we are displeased, we are revulsed, repugned. Yes, anytime you listen to my podcast, you got a carry dictionary. You people will learn by fire, by force. But you get the gist. Now, like I said, this doesn't make people bad. It's just a product of our society. Now, that doesn't mean we can't change it, but at first, you can't change something that you don't acknowledge is there and needs changing in the first place. So now, onto you who is hiding your grief. Why are you hiding your grief? Sure, other people are disgusted, but like, what does that have to do with you? Like I said, shame. Shame, 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 shame. I want to give a sociological definition of shame, if you guys will allow me. I mean, you don't have a choice, dear friend, so you're going to allow me. Anyway, the sociological definition of shame refers to a social and cultural phenomenon that involves the stigmatization and labeling of individuals or groups based on their perceived deviance from social norms, value, or expectations. It is often associated with the violation of societal rules or expectations, leading to a loss of social status, respect, and acceptance within a community or society at large. Daniel, what does all of this mean? Summarize, please. Good. Thank you for asking for a summary. In essence, according to the sociological definition of shame, shame is something that we do to people. It's usually something that, you know, is impressed upon people. We usually shame people when we feel like as if they have violated some sort of expectations. They have fallen short of the standard, if you will. And this might lead to our loss of respect for them. It might lead to, you know, us not seeing them as equal anymore. For instance, now, in a homophobic society such as Nigeria, or a racist society, or don't let me use the racism example. I'll enter a lot of trouble for that. Homophobia is quite easy, so let me go with homophobia. In a homophobic society such as Nigeria, no matter how buff you are as a man, right? Let's say you are buff, you have a 10-inch, you know what I'm talking about. You have money, a lot of money, you know, differences like that. And then you end up coming out as a gay man. It's not even as somebody who lives a particularly active lifestyle as a gay man. Let's just say you admit that, oh, you're a Christian brother, and then you struggle with these emotions. Let's keep it the book. Let's be honest. That person will most likely lose some sort of social standing and respect among his peers and community. He most likely might not be able to attend his church anymore, because coming out so open and, you know, being that accountable and just, you know, being honest and vulnerable in that sense will end in some sort of ostracization. It will end in some sort of stigmatization, right? Some people are not going to look at him the same way anymore. Some people are going to think that he's now less of a man because he's attracted to somebody of the same sex and all those kind of things, right? That is societal shame. And we internalize that particular sense of shame because we live in a society. I've been waiting to say that throughout this entire episode. We live in a society, and living in a society means on some level you adhere to your societal standards. Whether you adhere to it positively or negatively, one thing is obvious. You will shape yourself around the expectations that society has for you. So for people who are defiant of the expectations society has for them, guess what? It is a negative form of conformity. You are still shaping yourself around those standards. Yes, you are shaping yourself as being rebellious to those standards, but guess what? It's still based on the original standards of society. You can't escape society. Society is a beast. We live in its maws. We are being digested slowly in its stomach acid. That is why we are suffering so much. God help us. But anyway, due to that sense of shame that we feel from observing somebody else's disgust towards something about us, the instinctual reaction is to hide. Bringing the Bible into this, remember the story of Adam and Eve? They ate the fruit, and the Bible said that their eyes were open. And when God came calling, what was the thing they did? They hid due to their sense of shame. They ran away and hid. And that is what most of us do when we are depressed, when we are having such a tough time. We usually up the ante. Our posts usually become one of us being way, way, way much more happier than we actually are. We are constantly posting memes. We are constantly posting funny videos. You know, we are constantly doing all this social performance and social posturing so that people will not realize how sad, lonely, and depressed we are. How much pain we are experiencing. Because here's the thing about being depressed or being in that particular state of mind, a similar state of mind, is that you become hyper aware of everybody else around you. Because number one, being anxious, being riddled with anxiety, being riddled with depression and everything means you're already hyper aware of yourself. You're already extremely self-aware. And that self-awareness also means that you are extremely self-aware of how people look at you. You are reading too much into everything. And so those moments where, you know, you
opened the lid, you just open the window somewhere and let the air of your shaggy, hit the nose of somebody else. And then you see that instinctual reaction, that guy, I detect you now. Why are you acting like this? Why are you outside? Kinecon, don't worry, to get better. Kinecon, something like that. Which most likely your people think is them giving you words of comfort. Newsflash, it's not. You instantly realize that, yes, people are disgusted by my pain, my grief, and especially the expression of it. It's not just the fact that I'm going through shege, it's that I'm telling people, I'm making them very, very aware that I am going through a lot. And that is not good. People don't like that on a very, very subconscious level. People really do not. And so most of us, we react in ways that honestly we would not like to react, but we do it anyway. And you notice it and you hide. And so you have maybe one or two people that you are totally, obvious and honest with. But most of the time you be honest with them online. Thank God for internet. You'll be honest with them online. You won't be honest face to face. Because at the same time, one thing that you'll be avoiding is you just don't want to see that reaction of disgust. And like I said, this doesn't necessarily make people bad. This doesn't mean that we are horrible people. It's the society that we live in. The society that we live in generally raises everybody to be horrible, myself included. And so it takes a lot of relearning to kind of like revitalize. And just because you are a religious person, the Christian, God-given, you are open-minded, Holy Spirit, doesn't mean that you are exempt from any single thing that I've talked about today. You are not. Believing that you are exempt from it is an indication that you are unwilling to accept that, yes, this is true, this is a problem. But maybe you disagree with my entire premise. Maybe you disagree with my answers throughout. Maybe you disagree with everything that I've said. Come and tell me. My social media is linked down below in the description. Reach out to me on WhatsApp, reach out to me on Twitter, reach out to me on Instagram. Let's have a little bit of a conversation. In fact, I might even like to have you on this podcast. And if you change my mind, I'll make an episode changing my mind. But yeah, I think that is basically it for today. Thank you so much for listening up to this point. I know I rambled on. I think I talked really, really fast. And I didn't mean to, but it's become sort of like a habit. But anyway, thank you so very much for listening. If you really like this episode, if you think it answered something for you, please just share. Share. I'm not going to ask for much. I'm not even going to ask for money. Just share. Share on your status. Share on social media. Share and talk to somebody about this episode. You understand? Tell them, oh, I heard something like this and this, and I think it makes sense to me. And if you disagree, like I said, you can reach out to me any single time. You can send me a mail. You can reach out to me on WhatsApp. You can reach out to me on Twitter. But I'm not going to tell you the handle of any one of those. Look in the description of this podcast, of this episode, right? And you would find it. Thank you so very much for listening. I appreciate you, dear friend. I hope this monologue of mine kind of like ignited something for you to think about. And even if it didn't, at least you reached the end. Not everybody does that. Thank you. You are lovely. You are the best.